and two composers from the old world harness the emotive force of the African-American spiritual. Tippett's A Child of Our Time, alongside music by Ives, Zimmerman and Samuel Barber. Wednesday night at the BBC Proms, starting at 7:30.
Well, it's just gone midday and time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Sir Adrian Cadbury was for 24 years chairman of Cadbury Schweppes. He's also been a director of the Bank of England, Chancellor of Aston University, and steward of Henley Royal Regatta, which befits somebody, Adrian, who was a former British Olympic rower.
Well, thank you.
And I'm sure that's why they chose you. Before we talk about the music, can we discuss where we are? Because we are actually sitting, recording this in a house in Birmingham. It's not now your house, but it had a strong connection to Cadbury, didn't it?
Yes, indeed. The business was founded by John Cadbury, my great-grandfather, in 1831. And he really made a very successful business of, I mean, quite surprisingly, being a sort of small manufacturer in the centre of Birmingham. But he, in fact, acquired the Royal Warrant in 1835. Then his wife died, he became ill, the business ran down, and in 1861, he handed the business over to two of his sons, Richard and George, George being my grandfather. And 1861, Richard Cadbury, on taking over the business with his brother, in fact got married, and the first house that he lived in with his wife is the one we're in now.
And this all presumably started with chocolate, did it?
Well, the answer is yes, but great-grandfather was a grocer, and so he sold tea, coffee, cocoa. And in those days, of course, you blended the tea, you blended the coffee, ground the beans and all the rest of it. And with the cocoa, you did exactly the same thing. That's to say, you acquired the beans, you roasted the beans, took the shell off, and then, in fact, ground it with a pestle and mortar. But, of course, what it made was really a lump of cocoa rather than actually chocolate. And what you did was you used a knife to chip bits off this block and add hot water or hot milk and make a drink of it. And it was a little time before actually the idea of turning it into something to eat came along. So it was really a cocoa business. I mean, when Richard and George, the second generation, took the business over, it really was on its beam ends. They gave themselves, interestingly, 5 years to get it straight. And if they hadn't got it straight by then, they could still pay everybody off and they would quit. And my grandfather had it in mind to become a tea planter in the Himalayas. And so one of the things I sometimes reflect on is what would it have been like if, you know, I was in Nepal or Assam or somewhere like that.
Well, you might not have played Western musical instruments.
No, no.
Which instruments did you play when you were young?
Well, I played a clarinet. I mean, not well. That was really what gave me my love of music. Because I think one of the things that's interesting is that if you take part in a school play, you learn your part, but very soon you learn everybody's parts. And exactly the same with when I first then played in this relatively small orchestra at school. You pick up what is being played by all the separate instruments, and it is that which gives you, I think, first of all, the understanding of the part that the separate instruments play and the way in which they have their different melodies. And then the whole comes together. And it is that remarkable bringing together of all these different pieces that then produces the majestic symphony.
And the Majestic Symphony that you've chosen is, I think, the first one you played, isn't it?
Yes, that's exactly why I chose it. can you imagine a more exciting piece to, you know, to start you off? And I mean, that completely opened my ears, my eyes, to the beauty of orchestral music.
We heard the first movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 1, played by the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Herbert von Karajan. Now, Adrian Cadbury, I think one thing that's quite important to mention in terms of your background and the firm, indeed, you were talking about how listening to other instruments induces what one might call loosely a form of communion, in a sense, because you were all working together. And I think a sort of Quaker ethic has been very important to you, hasn't it, in life?
I think that the values that I learned from the Quaker faith and from the members of my family were enormously important, yes. What I tried to do was to adhere to those values, and there seems to me to be absolutely no conflict between the kind of Quaker approach. One of the things is listening to people in the business, and another is participation, because again, the Quaker approach to resolving issues is not necessarily consensus, but it is achieving what is referred to as the sense of the meeting. That's to say, this is the point at which you can bring people together enough to make progress. And you've listened, and you know, there are some opinions which you can't include in that, but there you have to make decisions. But you make the decisions on the basis that you've heard what everyone has to say, that when you then come to actually make the decision, which may not be comfortable, that nevertheless you have the ability to carry people with you. So I think participation, I think listening. And the third point, which is very much a Quaker approach, is the importance of the individual. The Quaker view being that we all have the light within us, and everybody who works in the business has a contribution to make. And your job as you move up the management scale is helping people to make the most of the attributes and talents they've got. And so one of the things that I inherited at Bonbon, for example, was a very comprehensive scheme of education for the younger employees. And one of the things that struck me so much, which went back to my grandfather's day, was he said that if the job that the youths, in this case they were boys, were doing is a monotonous job, then in the time off that they were given to education, they must be allowed the greatest breadth of things that they can study.
One of the things that you studied with a growing passion when you were at school was an opera, because it was the only classical record there, I think.
That's absolutely right. And I was studying modern languages, which I still love. And we had Cecchetti da Manina, was the one classical record that we had in the collection. So we played that and played that. And that sort of, nevertheless, it was a window onto opera for me.
Thank you.
you can see how that carried us away as schoolboys. Even so, we really drove that record to destruction. And in addition to the opening, so to speak, to opera, I very much enjoyed French. And I was secretary of Le Cercle Français and allowed to take parties of other students to London to see French films. Wonderful films, I mean, like Les Enfants du Paradis. But the teaching of languages was very good at the school because actually a film is wonderful because you have the beautiful French, I mean, particularly French. The actors and actresses speak most beautifully. And on top of that, which was, I think, imaginative, we had sessions of French singing and German singing. And again, the thing about that is that there is this very close link between music and language, and then the culture and life of the people whose music and language you're listening to. From the singing, you had an extra dimension to the language.
And of course, the singer there, some think, is still the greatest tenor. I mean, even eclipsing the three tenors.
Yes.
Jussi Björling.
Yes,
he was singing Rodolfo in Che Gelida Manina from La Bohème by Puccini. And we had the RCA Victor Orchestra conducted by Sir Thomas Beecham. Adrian, the next music is, of course, a wonderful piece of music, but it might not necessarily have been thought of in this way by the composer initially.
Well, I then, after school and before going to university, had 2 years in the army. I was in the Coldstream Guards. I spent most of my service in Tripoli. It's a fascinating country. It saddened me enormously, obviously, the things that have happened. But in those days, this is 1948, it was as, you know, a good a place as you could be, really, if you were going to spend your time in the army. And we did, in fact, follow the example of the Queen's birthday parade and trooping colour. And this piece of music that's coming up is the slow march of the Coldstream Guards. And you will understand the next bit after we've heard it. Well, that's the slow march of the Coldstream Guards, named Figaro, as you will have gathered. And at the ceremony that we performed in Tripoli, with a large crowd of local inhabitants watching with amazement, then a major from the Army Medical Corps stepped out of the crowd, waving a large banner which said, "Unfair to Mozart,"
A protest,
but fortunately it didn't upset anything. But of course, what amused me was to the total incomprehension of those who were watching this.
Mozart would have been quite amused, I think.
Well, that's good to hear.
So we heard the band of the Coldstream Guards, conducted by Major Roger Swift, playing music from Mozart's Figaro, that slow march. Your life has taken you to sort of musical occasions and events that have peppered your life. Coldstream Guards in Tripoli, as you say, is probably baffling to the locals. But the next piece takes us to another wonderful setting, of course, which is the Chapel of King's College.
Yes. It made an enormous impression. I think that having that gap of 2 years between school and university had a very big effect on what you got from university. It would have been easy to go on studying modern languages, which I loved. I then reflected, well, do I in fact want to continue learning what I was learning, but doing it in more depth? And decided no, I really wanted to make a change. I was very fortunate in being at King's. Of course, the music and the chapel were very much part of the college. Some of the colleges were definitely sort of sporting colleges. King's was primarily academic, but regarded any form of endeavour with tolerance.
Presumably you heard this piece in the chapel.
Yes, the major impact of the chapel to the outside world are the readings from the Bible and the singing by the choir at Christmas. And this, to me, really exemplifies all of that.
Was Jesus Christ, the Apple Tree, by Elizabeth Poston, sung by King's College Choir, conducted by Sir David Wilcox.
Yes.
One of the things, Adrian Cadbury, that must give you a great deal of pleasure is the way cultural life in Birmingham has developed. We've got the CBSO, Symphony Hall, Graham Vicks, Opera Company, BRB, Birmingham Royal Ballet. There's a lot going on.
I think we're incredibly fortunate in Birmingham that people like David Bintley at BRB has stayed here, that Graham Vick from the Met and so on comes here to do Birmingham Opera, and that Birmingham Opera is actually the one I'm most involved in as patron. Two world premieres this year for Graham Vick is going to do, and he brings the community in. I mean, it's a marvellous piece, but there's also, as you say, there's the CBSO, there's the Conservatoire, there's the Hippodrome. So I think we are incredibly fortunate here in that there really is almost everything.
Not least to mention a rather world-class cricket ground, just a few 300 yards from where we're sitting.
Yes, I was thinking of the musical tradition, but I mean, no, you're absolutely right.
Well, talking, Adrian, of companies here in Birmingham, BRB, Birmingham Royal Ballet, have premiered many pieces, and one or two that have really gone on to be extremely successful, and this one, Still Life at the Penguin Cafe. What do you like about it?
First of all, I adore ballet, and I think the range of ballets, as you say, that we have seen that David Bint has been involved with, the classical ballets, I mean, like Nutcracker and Swan Lake, and I've chosen this because I just think that it really is a magical piece. I fortunately have it on CD, and I can go on seeing it. But we'll hear it start, and then I'll say what I think about the, particularly the opening.
Thank you.
Of course, you only have the music, but I mean, the music alone is captivating. But if you can imagine, against that background of music, the penguin waiters holding their trays on the flat of their hand, dancing round the stage. I mean, it is just the most captivating scene. To me, it is really just magic.
That was Air à Danser by Simon Jeffs, opening of Still Life at the Penguin Cafe, the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted there by Barry Wordsworth. Now, this is opportunist of us to have you here during the Olympics, and you must be incredibly excited by how well we've done at rowing in the last few years.
It's been absolutely wonderful. I was extraordinarily fortunate to go to the Olympics in 1952. I mean, it is the sort of sporting pinnacle. It starts perhaps with ambition, uncertainty, and you realise how competitive it is, and then you put your crew together, and the crew we had were just four of us in the boat, which I think is one of the most enjoyable forms of rowing. There's no sort of shouting or anything else. We move as one. Bao's job is to steer the boat. My job at stroke is to set the pace. But when the pace changes, we feel the change.
Just like music.
Yes, just like music. Absolutely right. And there's no shouting, there's no nothing. We just change. And it really was the most wonderful experience. I suppose the first time you really felt that this was real was when the first time we put our uniform on, which was for an afternoon tea at Buckingham Palace. And there was only one sort of slight surprise, which was in the bright sunshine of the palace garden. I realised that our white trousers were in fact semi-transparent, and my blue pants, to which I was very attached, had to be relegated. But so that you sort of feel, well, OK, you're wearing uniform, that's it. Then we flew to Helsinki. We were very fortunate because the Olympic Games in Helsinki were called the Friendly Games because, for the first time, the communist countries joined in. And it was not so big. The entire set of competitors from all over the world fitted into three large marquees for meals. So, I mean, we met people. And although it's obviously highly competitive, there is a sense of comradeship among all those taking part. I mean, it is true, this business of participation being so important. You've all got there in the same way. You've all had to, when your heats emerge as the contenders for your country, for your particular sport.
How did you do?
Well, one of the things that really hits you is obviously the standard. You've won all right on your home ground. Now you're up against the rest of the world. And actually, we were rowing on sea as well, which was, we weren't entirely used to. Well, not used to, sorry, that's right. Sort of typically
there's
English.
Quite a difference.
Meiosis, about saying not entirely used to. There's quite a difference, absolutely right. And we got through to the semi-finals, and then we actually won our heat in the semi-finals. And at that point, we had the third fastest time. But of course, it all turns on the final. And in fact, we came fourth. And obviously, you desperately hope to be standing there on the podium. And so it's disappointing. But at the end of the day, I'm sad when I see people who occasionally sort of cynical about I know things have changed and I know there are problems that we didn't have in those days. But nevertheless, it really is a quite extraordinary experience, which you never forget. It's 60 years, but the marvel of it all is still with me.
So will you enjoy these games with those memories still in your mind?
Absolutely. For the games to have come here again. I mean, this is a great moment, and it's a moment for everyone to enjoy and take pride in.
You talked a lot, Adrian, about that sort of communal spirit and sort of pulling together, both literally in the boat and metaphorically in the orchestra. And this next piece by Verdi is a great hymn, isn't it, of solidarity in a sense.
It is. And for me, there are two things that come to mind. And the first is, one of the wonderful things about opera is that all life is there. almost every aspect of the human condition is reflected in opera. And when I think of this piece, I think of the dispossessed and the refugees and the oppressed. And it stands for all of that. But I think the second point that also strikes me very forcibly about opera is that, of course, the music and the singing is what you think of, but actually the power of the story is also fundamental. And so that it is operas like Tosca, which I particularly love, and Eugene Onegin, the power of those stories is enormous because they are part of a musical background. And it should move you, and this does.
Va Pensiero, the chorus of the Hebrew Slaves from Verdi's Nabucco, Act 3, Scene 2. We heard the choir and orchestra of the Deutsches Oper Berlin, conducted by Giuseppe Sinopoli. Do you feel particularly attached, Adrian Cadbury, to music of any particular nation, or do you just find that it's whatever happens to move you from there, or do you have a sympathy for one school, as it were?
It's a very interesting question, which I've not really thought about. I don't think it is...
It transcends.
Yes, I think it transcends. I think that is absolutely right. I have a piece of Russian music coming because Russian music is profoundly distinctive. But I think, it, as you rightly say, it's all part of the magic carpet.
And the carpet, in this case, has a sort of imaginary figure at its centre, doesn't
it? Yes, absolutely. And that's rather what appeals to me. I enjoy the Russian character. And the piece that we're going to hear, of course, is a totally imaginary character, which I think is very Russian. There's an excellent story called Dead Souls by Gogol, in which all his serfs, they aren't actually there. And I think this world of the imagination of the Russians is something that is very specific and that we ought to enjoy. Reflecting on that and actually on what we've heard so far, I find it very interesting that to me the companions in life are music and books, and that one of the differences is that I very rarely read books twice. I love reading Beatrix Potter to children and Wind in the Willows, but I mean I don't normally reread books, whereas I have just enjoyed listening to the records that we've had.
Do you think that's partially because in its abstraction you can bring something of yourself to it every time? It is what you choose to find in the music.
I think that's very much part of it, because I think another way of looking at that is that every time you hear a piece of real music, you do hear something different actually in the music, quite apart from your own mood. I can go on listening to any of the pieces that I've chosen.
We heard the Chicago Symphony Orchestra conducted by Fritz Reiner in Quiget's Wedding from the Lieutenant Quiget Suite by Prokofiev. Now, you're going to conclude, Adrian Cadbury, with A Raindrop. What prompted this?
Well, I couldn't leave Chopin out because there is something very, you know, going back to what you were saying, actually, about backgrounds and cultures and so on, and here's this Pole, and there is something very distinctive about Chopin. So I really wanted to bring some aspect of that extraordinary virtuosity in.
The prelude, Opus 28, number 15, known as Raindrop, by Chopin, played by Claudio Arrau. Well, we should thank Jim Berrow for letting us use what is now his house, which has, has such strong associations for you. And thank you, Adrian Cadbury. Wonderful to have an Olympian here at this particular moment.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. It's been a journey, and a journey which I've thoroughly enjoyed, and you've been very indulgent.
Adrian Cadbury was talking to Michael Barclay, and next week on Private Passions, Michael's guest will be the Greek composer Vangelis, best known for his score for Hugh Hudson's award-winning film about British runners in the 1924 Olympic Games, Chariots of Fire. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3, and the producer of today's programme was Chris Marshall.
On Radio 3 from the BBC Proms, Bach's Mass in B Minor, one of the great cornerstones of the choral repertoire, conducted by Baroque specialist Harry Bickett. Bach's Mass in B Minor at the BBC Proms, Thursday night on BBC Radio 3 at 7:30.
Well, this is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock, and this is David Cornett with a summary of the news. The chairman of London 2012, Lord Coe, has said he's seriously looking into complaints about large numbers of empty seats at Olympic Games venues, although he's insisted that the issue should be kept in perspective. Vacant rows can be seen at the gymnastics and basketball for a second day running. Sponsors insist that they are using or have given away all their seats. In today's events, the women's cycle road race is underway, with Nicole Cook hoping to retain the title she won in Beijing 4 years ago. The sailor Ben Ainslie, who's won 3 Olympic golds, is on the water in Weymouth in the first of his heats. And in the pool, Rebecca Adlington is through to the final of the 400 metres freestyle, an event she won in the 2008 Games. More than 30 people are reported to have been killed in the Syrian city of Aleppo as government forces continue to attack rebel-held areas. A United Nations refugee camp has opened at the border town of Zaatari in Jordan for the thousands of Syrians fleeing across the border. A UN representative said that getting enough supplies is a struggle. The Republican candidate for US President, Mitt Romney, says he would respect Israel's decision if it took military action to stop Iran's nuclear program. He's due to speak in Jerusalem, saying that Tehran is testing Israel and America's moral defences. President Obama has pledged to look at ways to reduce gun violence across the United States following the recent shooting dead of 12 people at a cinema in Colorado. He said it was important to stop weapons getting into the hands of dangerous people. Oxford University has rewritten its dress code on the advice of its lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender society. From next week, students taking exams or attending formal occasions will no longer have to wear ceremonial clothing which is specific to their gender. Men will be able to sit tests in skirts and stockings, and women will have the option of wearing suits and bow ties. And the weather, it'll be a dry and bright start for most of the UK, but there will be a scattering of heavy and thundery showers in the far west, which will spread into other areas by late afternoon. BBC News and weather at 1:02. And time now to continue our weekend of coverage from the 2012 WOMAD Festival at Charlton Park in Wiltshire. Here's Lucy Duran live on the Radio 3 stage.
Hello, and today we're presenting a very special project from Colombia via London. But first, as you can hear, we have a wonderful crowd here at Charlton Park at the Radio 3 stage. Well, 3 years ago, BBC's flagship world music programme, World Roots, launched the World Roots Academy. This is a scheme to promote young, new talent living in the UK by putting them together with a mentor from their country of origin. This year, we're focusing on the lively tradition of accordion music from Colombia, known as Vallenato. It all started back in January with a concert in Broadcasting House, in which none other than Damon Albarn announced our protege, who's a 19-year-old musician whose parents are Colombian, but he was born and raised in London. This extremely talented young man had fallen in love with Vallenato music when he was very young. Since the January event, the World Roots Academy on Radio 3 has done everything from a session in a popular Colombian restaurant in South London to entering our protege into the Festival of Vallenato in Valledupar in northeast Colombia. He actually got into the quarterfinals of the amateur category. And believe me, that's something, because the competition was very fierce. Not bad for a Londoner who learned from YouTube. Well, the Academy culminates this year with a late night prom in a couple of days. That's Tuesday evening at the Albert Hall, in which our protege will be performing together with his mentor from Colombia, the top accordionist, virtuoso Egidio Cuadrado, with his band. So you must join us for that. But now, here at WOMAD on the Radio 3 stage, he's presenting a new collaboration with a group of London-based Colombian musicians who call themselves Papayera. They'll be treating us to traditional music from Colombia's tropical coast. And we need that today because it's slightly rainy, but we're fine, aren't we? So here we are with this nine-piece band led by Rafael Sarmiento with singer Angelica Lopez. And on the accordion, our very own World Roots Academy protege, José Hernando Noguera.
Bajo el sol.